everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Murder Mystery Shack. Today's episode will be taking place in Anchorage, Alaska, largest city in the south central part of the state on the Cook Inlet. Known for its trails, wildfire, and glaciers, and also known to be home to more artists and musicians than any other place in Alaska. It's also a prime place to explore Alaska native cultures. Despite being a large city with beautiful nature and things to explore, Anchorage is also one of the most dangerous places to live in. The violent crime rate is 3 times higher than the national rate, and property crime is twice as high as national levels. Also, fun fact, which I don't know how fun this could actually be, but Alaska's considered one of the deadliest states for women. Over 59% of women have experienced violence here. On June 25th, around 9:30 a.m., Charles Albee got a knock on his door. A man wearing a leather jacket and a baseball cap rushed inside and told Albee to sit on his bed. The intruder would then slap him across the face multiple times. The man would tell him that he's there because Albee was a registered sex offender. Albee was convicted in 2003 of second-degree abuse of a minor, which according to womanslaw.org, second degree is basically 13, 14, or 15. Albee mentions to the police that the man had a notebook with him with a list of names. The intruder then took some of Albee's items and left his home. 2 days passed, and on June 27th, Andres Barbosa answered his door at 4 in the morning. Which, who the hell opens their door at 4 in the morning? A white male in a baseball hat and a dark jacket asked for his name, Barbosa? According to Barbosa, after confirming his identity, the man pulled out a hammer and entered his home with 2 women. The man then made Barbosa sit in a chair, telling him that he was there to collect what he was owed for his crimes. Barbosa was charged in 2014 of possession of child porn. The man started to punch Barbosa several times in the face, threatening him to punch his domen with the hammer. Barbosa told police that the man and one of the women started to steal things, including his truck, while the other woman recorded it on her phone, and then they left. On June 29th, around 1 a.m., Wesley DeMarest was awakened by his roommate who tells him that someone had just smashed the window. A man with shoulder-length hair and black leather jacket stood behind his roommate with a hammer. He then ordered his roommate to leave. The man ordered DeMarest to get on his knees, and when he refused, the man hit him in the head with a hammer, knocking him out. In 2006, DeMarest was convicted of attempted sexual abuse of a minor. The man then steals several items and leaves. Shortly after, police ended finding this man sitting in a gray Honda Civic, holding the notebook with the names of these convicted sexual offenders. He matched the description of the attacks, and he was later identified as Jason Vukovich, and was arrested and taken to the Anchorage jail for almost a month, facing 18 charges of assault, robbery, burglary, and theft. Jason would describe himself as an avenging angel for abused children. Jason would later write a letter to reporters saying that, although he can't talk about his current charges, he would shed some light into his situation. He would then tell us about his childhood after being adopted, beat, and molested as a child. Jason was quoted as saying, "After this adoption took place, I was beaten with 2x4s, custom made for the purpose of inflicting pain." He also wrote that he suffered repeated molestation at this man's hands. His adopted father, Larry Lee Fulton, was actually found guilty of second-degree child abuse, only to receive a 3-year suspended sentence. Court Judge Carl Johnston ordered Lee Fulton to stay away from his victim. Larry then returned home only to isolate Jason at home. "All I can say at this time is that after being physically and mentally abused by a predator, my life was forever changed. I literally gave my own existence no value or concern." He expressed how children should be able to play in the street without the threat of pedophiles lingering around them. Jason is asking for strict bailout conditions. The prosecutors noted that he had been charged previously for fraud, theft, possession of drugs, and assault. Jason actually got out of jail on June 24th, just the day before he assaulted Charles Albee. Freshly released from the jail, he collected names from acquaintances who told him that these men were pedophiles. His older brother, Joel Fulton, would also tell us that he has never recovered for what has happened to them as children, even with therapy. Joel was quoted as saying, "I'm never gonna get better. Never." Joel lives in California and has a successful career in cybersecurity. While the brothers were never close, Joel wanted to help his brother and pleaded with the court to help him, as Jason had turned to drugs and crime to cope with his past. Prosecutors argued that just because Jason did not like a group of people, that he could not take justice into his own hands and target them. These men that he had assaulted were following the law. They had gone through the court system and had their names in the registered sex offender site. Their names were not out there for people like Jason to take matters into their own hands, but to keep the community safe. Although the judge did sympathize with the two men for their past, he could not let go of the fact that Jason was willing to hurt people and is a danger to society. Judge Marson sentenced Jason Volkovich to 25 years in prison and 5 years probation. Jason actually expressed remorse and apologized for his actions. Wesley Damaris told the New York Post that he preferred that his former attacker wasn't walking around while he was alive. He was quoted as also saying, "He destroyed my life. I guess that's what he wanted." Jason would say, "I began my life sentence many years ago. It was handed down to me by my ignorant, hateful, poor substitute of a father. I now face losing most of the rest of my life due to a decision to lash out at people like him. To all those who have suffered, like I have, love yourself. And those around you, this is truly the only way forward." This story is so sad to me, considering the fact that he tried to be a Dexter in some sort of way. Now, I feel like there's so many things wrong with the story. Of course, I feel like Jason was taking all the wrong turns, and I feel like this low-key was kind of an excuse almost, maybe, to just excuse his behavior. But also, at the same time, they're sex offenders, and they're convicted sex offenders. Like, why are we letting these people back on the street? I don't understand that at all. And the judge to say that you can't target these people because they've gone through the system, it's all bullshit, honestly. Like, who cares? Like, these men, like, imagine the victim of, like, imagine, like, Damara saying, like, his life was ruined, blah, blah, blah. He didn't want Jason out on the streets while he was alive. It's like, yeah, and I wonder what your victim that got you on the sexual, you know, your victim, because he is a convicted sex offender, would say about these people that are, like, out there, not in jail, you know? So I think that's kind of weird, but whatever. His story, I feel like, is very interesting. It makes sense why he decided to lash out at these people. Of course, he had a troubled past, and the judge just couldn't excuse him. He's still in prison to this day, I believe, and sadly, I think he'll stay in there for quite a while. I think he just was misunderstood. I feel like he really needed some help, and with drugs and alcohol, he, like his brother said, he just turned to all these bad things to cope with all the trauma in his life. And I mean, was it the worst thing ever that he was attacking pedophiles? I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. I hope you guys keep listening. I'll see you next time. Stay groovy, y'all.